host Chris Andre following this.
We're having a party.
KBOO Community Radio will launch our new Production Room 3 Saturday, July 9th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at KBOO Studios. This event is open to the public and everyone is invited. We will be offering tours of the station as well as tours of the new production room, which is a state-of-the-art interview and editing room. Come test out the equipment and make your own recording. Join us for refreshments and a reception at 4 p.m. to thank the donors, foundations, and volunteers who have made this project possible. Again, that's the Production Room 3 Celebration and Launch Party, Saturday, July 9th, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
Join us Sunday night, July 10th, from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Soul Music and Politics. We will celebrate the life and music of Mr. Donny Hathaway. We will also deconstruct the at-large voting process in Multnomah County and Portland, Oregon that keeps the status quo power elite in power. Sunday night for Soul Music and Politics, July 10th, from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. on KBOO.
Keep on walking tall. Hold your head up high.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, Right to Survive, Breaking the Chains, will play Thursday, July 14th at 7 p.m. The night will give an inside perspective of the struggles of the houseless community and showcase a series of short films documenting Right to Survive's origins in 2009, Direct Actions, and its annual Pitch a Tent Campout, which protests the city's hypocrisy when it comes to allowing sidewalk camping for the Rose Parade. Many of the Right to Survive board members will also share their experiences and talk about the process of moving to their new location. Again, that's Right to Survive, Breaking the Chains, Thursday, July 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, July 5th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on the airwaves, KBOO.FM on the wirewaves. We have first weather. This is a Cascadia after all, and it's been a bunchy, lumpy, clotted sort of weather recently. Nice if you've grow things in the earth. It's probably a bit inconvenient for others. The weather today, patchy drizzle early on, and exposed to gradual, that's supposed to burn off later on, and highs reaching around 72. Light northwest winds increasing a wee bit in the afternoon, nothing that you'd particularly notice. And for tonight, partly overcast, lows around 57. What is it with this? It's always like 72 during the day, 57 at night, but we'll let that go because it usually is just about that. For tomorrow, mostly sunny and a high around 75. Tomorrow night, overcast skies, lows around 60, and northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And that's about it for the weather. One thing, if you do grow things in the ground, boring weather is the best kind of weather to have. And that's what we have right now, boring weather. We have a pretty exciting show for you, though. Our guest today is Ninette de Klumkun, or Alphonse Gagnon. He is one of the Wet'suwet'en leaders, one of the hereditary chiefs. Three of them signed onto a press release that came rolling across the email beach this last night. Wet'suwet'en hereditary chief set the record straight in response to the province of British Columbia's divide and conquer sharp dealings. And we know what those dealings are concerned with. Yes, that's right. LNG and tar sands coming straight out of the utterly destroyed province of Alberta. See the aerial footage flying over the tar sands in what do you call it? It's not a pit. It's a it's a completely devastated area. It is the most frighteningly ugly sight to behold, and it seems to go on to the horizons. We recently saw the burning of Fort McMurtry, that would be the main township up there. Most of the outlying what would be suburbs are so-called man camps, where the workers who are complicit in destroying Alberta, that's where they live. Now, however, with the drop-off in the price of LNG, those camps are beginning to empty out. That said, tar sands flowing into British Columbia, the Wet'suwet'en have managed to hold the line there. They have fought the most incredible battle with the province of British Columbia, representing, of course, the pipeline interests. And at the moment, with this press release coming out, there was a meeting yesterday that we are going to talk a little bit more about in just a moment. The hereditary chiefs, the Provincial Ministry of Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation, get this, the acronym MAR, had secretly planned with and provided resources to a new BC Societies Act. Now, we're going to be talking a lot about the BC Societies Act. A new version of this has just come out, and it is highly damaging to First Nations. The Wet'suwet'en, the organization called the Wet'suwet'en Matriarchal Society, evidencing yet another in a long series. These are dishonorable, sharp dealings by the Crown. They undermine proper rights holders' authority of the hereditary chiefs. They create a division and strife within the Wet'suwet'en Nation. This has been building for some time now. And we're going to go to a few headlines before we speak with one of those hereditary chiefs in just a moment. We're going to be speaking with Ninette de Klumkun, Alphonse Gagnon. And I suggest that if you get a chance to Google that New Societies Act, it's a strange title for a strange entity. What we hear from Alphonse himself, this is revolving around the Wet'suwet'en, the Unist'ot'en recent history, which has been a massive action to protect lands from Lionsgate metals. There has been an encampment. Yes Magazine came out with something that really scratched me the wrong way. It seemed to suggest that a handful of white people were responsible for the protection of these First Nations lands, and irresponsible of yes to publish it, and arrogant in the extreme, egocentric, again, a typical white perspective on that action camp. For right now, however, that's just a little bit of a preview of what we're going to be talking about today. Saturday marked the 140th anniversary of what's known as Custer's Last Stand. Most people have some vague notion of what that was. Thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of amateur experts, probably more amateur experts, have been involved in recounting this than people are actually involved. It was an immediate disaster for the Army, of course, and going forward it was a disaster for the Lakota, Cheyenne, and a few Arapaho, who, although at the actual battle, they lost only an estimated 36 to 50 warriors. Yes, go Lakota, right? Not an opponent that you would really ever want to face in battle. Tough people. They subsequently lost huge, huge portions of their lands that have been granted by treaty in perpetuity. That is what they lost. So you can say, well, they only lost 36 to 50 people. But when you consider the fact that Lakota, Cheyenne, Arapaho, and indeed all First Nations peoples regard themselves to be physically part of the land, of their land, then those numbers look vastly different. Just saying. Jordan Cove, recently, a message coming in from Jody McCaffrey. She quotes Edmund Burke, that saying that we all hear echoing in our minds all the time: the only thing necessary for the tribe of evil is for a good man to do nothing. Well, there are hearings coming up for the Planning Commission on all of the proposed Coos County Ordinance amendments. There's a file number and all that. The Planning Department would have liked testimony by June 27th, but it's been extended. The Coos County Board of Commissioners is conducting a public hearing on the legislative amendments to the Coos County Zoning and Land Development Ordinance on July 19th, 1:30 p.m. Here's what we're talking about. Translation of all that is they're going to be considering changing laws to accommodate corporations. Now, if that isn't the corporatization of government, then you tell me what is. They're changing laws designed to protect this community, to protect habitat. The place where if we were First Nations people, Coos County citizens were for the most part, we're all First Nations, then that would be considered changing a law that would do direct and deliberate harm to people who lived there, and it would not stand. This would never come up. The fact that they are considering changing a law to accommodate corporations at great cost, at great potential cost to taxpayers in that area. It seems that it's so preposterous that we even consider it. But there it is. There it is. And I guess there always will be. Having a little trouble reaching any one of the three hereditary chiefs. We're going to keep trying, though. It's important. Here are just a few examples. Returning to Jordan Cove, some of the concerns. City Council, the City Council in general supports the Jordan Cove project. Well, we know they've been bought. That's a huge concern. At this meeting, it's someone should stand up on their hind legs and ask the City Council, what gain did they come on board with the Jordan Cove project? Also, think of the negative impacts there's a neighborhood and a park system right bang smack on top of this, and they're going to be changing laws to basically knock out the neighborhood and the park. And then, of course, there's cost of the city and taxpayers for infrastructure upgrades, translation, man camp, not to mention the sewers, a negative impact, of course, on healthcare facilities in the area, impacts on the police and fire departments, which will be enormously overtaxed to provide services with this huge influx of people who are only here, only interested in their own gain, only interested in their own personal gain, those very few jobs that are provided. One of the things to think about when they say jobs and all that, people move around so much now in a panicked race to find some sort of employment, any employment at any price. There is no connection to the land. Even white people, if they live on a parcel of land, they grow up there, that they have memories implanted from an early age, that creates emotional bonds to the earth, even if it's a suburb. People will have that connection. And in the end, those connections, that love that is generated at an early age, that is why we fight, why anyone fights to preserve their land. Now we don't have any, we are very, very few people now who have any kind of a strong emotional bond to any piece of land. We are all aimless merchants of fortune, traveling the land, searching for the last scraps of well-being that are to be found. If you do nothing but wander the nation looking for a job, you have no connection to the earth. Your feet are planted nowhere except the road. So the road, that would be the bodily extension that First Nations understand so well, and that's what they're fighting to save. And in the very last years of our lives, our shared lives on planet Earth. So I have to just quickly mention too, water managers in Idaho have started releasing more cold water from a reservoir in northern Idaho for endangered Snake River sockeye salmon following a year where, get this, we leave this microphone on the note, 99% of the run died last year. 99% of sockeye salmon died